No sound.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay. Is Dennis at, if he's not here just yet, Joe, would you want to get started?
Yeah, we could do that unless you want to do the normal roundtable stuff first, if we have any business before we
Oh,
get
really?
into the meat of things.
I don't. Does anybody else have anything you want to bring up at the start of the meeting? If not, then if we'll let Dennis. Oh wait, Dennis is here. Dennis, did you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah, not a problem with me.
Okay. All right,
Okay.
I don't think we have anything else. It's you and then Joe.
Thank you very much. Let me just grab this issue number. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to share my screen. This, as I was kind of thinking about this in advance of the meeting, it might be a silly question to ask, but I wanted to be really, really sure about how to proceed with this as far as like user expectations. So I may ask some silly questions, and it's really going to be math heavy, probably. And this has to do with managing encumbrances for order records. So if that's your thing, I really need your help. Okay. So we've discovered in a couple of scenarios that maybe sort of edge cases, like they likely don't happen that often, but they happen often enough to cause some discrepancies in the encumbered value of budgets. I think we've finally discovered what is causing this problem. So the specific scenario here, I think there are two situations. One of them has to do with, so there are two scenarios in this story that I'm sharing. It might be tough to read the text, I apologize. I'll go through it though. The first scenario is something that happens when you cancel an invoice. The second scenario has to do with reopening orders. So after you have closed an order, you obviously have the option to open that order again. And that can cause this kind of strange problem. So the first scenario where we're talking about canceling invoices. The example here, someone has created an order with a value of $0. But the value here could be $10. You know, it doesn't have to be zero, it could be over zero, and you would still have the same issue. Then what happens is they open their order, presumably. In this case, nothing is encumbered. If you had $10 as a price here, you would have $10 encumbered. Then you create and pay an invoice for $50. So notice the amount is higher than what you expected. That creates a payment transaction. The encumbrance either remains zero or the encumbrance gets released and it is set to zero. Then someone pays, creates another invoice and pays that invoice for any amount of money. And then decides, or for whatever reason, needs to cancel invoice number two. So the payment for whatever amount invoice number two payment was for could have been $1, could have been $1 million. When the invoice is canceled, the $50 payment from the first invoice remains, but the current encumbrance value changes to a negative value. So for some reason, when canceling the second invoice, the system ends up, because in this case, the value of the order was zero. So it is adding $50 back to the budget when the second invoice is canceled, which is a strange occurrence, obviously. So if it were, if this had been $10, then there would be negative 40 here. If this was $50, then the encumbrance would be zero. And typically, this is probably how things are working, that when something, when this scenario happens, this issue is not happening because the order line has a value that resembles whatever the value of the initial payment was. So in this case, you're ending up with a negative encumbrance value. And I think it's fair to say that that just shouldn't be possible. That when you cancel the second invoice, the encumbrance value should still be $0. I'm just going to pause here to make sure that everyone, well, A, that you haven't fallen asleep yet, that you're still following along with what's happening. Kimberly, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Is there a problem with writing into the code that encumbrances can't fall below $0?
So that's essentially what I'd like to propose. Because that seems to me like there really is no scenario where you would expect to have a $0 or less than zero
I
in
have
it.
one order in my system where I anticipate like a credit back from a vendor,
Right.
a significant one, that's the only scenario that I can think of where I would want a negative encumbrance.
Yeah, I think that's why it is currently possible for the encumbrances to be negative, if memory serves. Like looking into this a little bit, there are some technical challenges with keeping track of How much should still be encumbered when you have a complicated situation with invoicing? If you set a minimum value of zero, then in certain situations, it's just tough to calculate what the value should be after the next thing happens, because you're kind of like, let's say otherwise would be negative 20, but you've said no, it's just going to be zero. You've now kind of lost that $20, or at least it's hidden. But I think we need a different mechanism for keeping track of that value, like for setting the correct encumbered number, but making sure that the amount of the encumbrance is never lower than zero. That makes sense. But in your scenario with the credit, are you actually expecting the encumbered value to be zero? Or sorry, let's say that it's a $10 credit. Are you actually expecting the encumbered value to be negative 10?
Yes, in that instance, I would be.
And that's because your order is probably still open.
Yes.
And you're expecting to make like another payment or
I'm
something.
expecting to receive a credit from the vendor. And so, in that instance, it would be, for example, if you had a transaction that passed through. And you were supposed to receive a refund of sales tax, for example, you would want maybe a negative encumbrance to show that you were due a refund or a
So
credit.
your order cost is negative
Yes.
because you're expecting to be given, like you've made this order, but you're actually getting paid for that order.
Yes, in a sense, yeah. I mean, it's just the way that we track like a prepayment credit that we get back from a vendor, but maybe we're the only library that's tracking it in that way. And we need to change what, yeah, I see Scott's comments are that negative encumbrances are red flags. Generally, they are for me as well. Yeah, I agree. It's definitely, I would know the reason for a negative encumbrance in the system generally.
And in previous, like in your past systems and other systems you worked in, where invoices immediately impact the system, meaning as soon as you create an invoice, a transaction of some kind is created. So if you have a credit invoice, you would have like a negative awaiting payment amount.
Yes, which so let me preface this with, this is the first library I've worked in. So when you say other systems that I've worked in previously, it's, outside of LSPs for me for sure.
But I mean,
From an accounting
that's a
standpoint.
very, this would be one kind of very specific scenario where the purchase order line you're creating actually has a negative value. Or are you actually creating an order for that thing that
I
you're expecting the vendor to give you credit for?
so I created an ongoing order to track it over invoicing, but it has a $0 encumbrance. The initial is set at zero, and I'm just using it to capture history. But
So sorry, I'm not trying to be annoying, but
no, you're good.
so you create a POL with a cost of zero.
Yes.
And then how do you end up with a negative? Or you're just saying you might expect a negative encumbrance, or that it might be useful to be able to say, I want a negative encumbrance for this because I'm expecting to be credited.
Right. That would be a situation in which it would be useful, but I'm not currently using the system that way.
Right, you're not doing it yet that way. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I want to describe the second scenario here as well. So at the moment in this scenario two, you've created an order for $0 again. Creates an initial encumbrance of $0. And then you pay an invoice for $200, which obviously creates a payment of $200. The encumbrance value is still zero. The order is closed. Obviously, the $200 payment remains. The encumbrance value is zero. The encumbrance is released. Reopening that order at the moment can now result in the encumbrance value being set to negative 200. And this is just a bug, essentially, that when reopening an order, the system tries to re-encumber the money that needs to be re-encumbered. It relies on information in the encumbrance transaction, and the encumbrance transaction has a $200 expended value, but a zero initial value. So it's just not quite smart enough at this point to realize it shouldn't be adding that value back. So it re-encumbers the $200. But effectively, in doing that, it creates a negative encumbrance because nothing was encumbered to begin with. So it's kind of a problem. Again, if the value of the order had matched the invoiced amount, this would be correct. But because the invoice amount was higher, you end up with a negative value encumbered in this scenario too. So, as you can imagine, this is likely contributing to situations where the encumbered amount is, when recalculating budgets, is actually changing the encumbered value because it is incorrect. So again, the thing that we're proposing here is that encumbrance, we don't really expect invoices to match encumbrances. No, agreed. So I agree that having some override. Yeah, so the proposal is that encumbrances should remain $0. Filing orders with initial encumbrance of zero. Obviously, even if invoices are canceled or orders are reopened, this wouldn't necessarily be a sweeping fix. So what we're thinking
Can I
is,
ask a question?
yeah, please do.
Okay, so in the second scenario, so one thing that's a difference with ongoing orders and one-time orders, or at least in our setup, and so I don't know if this is like the default or if this is just how we have set things up, but I think this is more general. So if you pay an invoice and it's a one-time order and you use the add POL, as a, connect for the invoice line, and you use that, the first one, which is usually what I do when I have a one-time order, then the
release encumbrance is already automatically checked off, right? And so I pay it and the encumbrance gets released, you know, at the end and everything. But with one-time orders, when I select when I select, I'm sorry, I'm just kind of looking at the actions now, a new blank line, which is what I usually use when I'm dealing with ongoing orders, because I have more stuff to add, like the, you know, date to and from, you know, for the subscription and yet in and other information, right? So I want to be able to edit everything. That checkbox is not automatically checked off already, and I have to manually check it off, which I do religiously.
Yes.
And because I rely on, even though it's an ongoing order, and I also encumber at $0 all my ongoing orders, regardless, that releasing that encumbrance, would that take care of this? I mean, is part of it, if the part about going back and opening it again, if I check off release encumbrance when I pay it, would that $200 then negatively go to $200?
No, because if the encumbrance is released, then the value is set to zero. So
Even if
would
I unopen it again and then reopen or unopen,
reopen it?
reopen, whatever.
That's right. It
Yeah.
should be looking at the payment status of the POL. And if the payment status is fully paid, when
Not
you.
fully, no, it will be ongoing.
Yeah. So if the payment status is ongoing, it would unrelease the encumbrance when you open the order. So you would end up with, or I guess in that, yes. So the status would be unreleased. So the value would be negative 200.
Would still be negative 200, even though at
Negative
the
whatever.
time of that $200 payment, I
You release
released the encumbrance.
Because
Okay.
it's looking at the payment, it's looking at the payment status. And ongoing is not at the moment, it's like it's not a resolution. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we could check the last invoice or something. We could do something like that and see if the last invoice was released encumbrance equals true, not re-encumber the encumbrance. As well, I mean, releasing the encumbrance does remove this issue, even though it would be negative, once they're released, the value is zero.
Right, because you like, am I correct in remembering? I can go then. I mean, when this happens,
Yeah.
the solution is you have to go to finance, you have to go
Release it.
to it and manually release that, whatever the
Yeah.
odd amount is,
Yeah.
whether it's negative or just an odd amount that's left.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, in the situation where the invoice is canceled, the problem is that second invoice release encumbrance was true. So you basically had the two invoices, the first one for $50 and the second one for $1,000. Both of them had release encumbrance equals true. So when you cancel the second invoice, all the system is doing is looking at it and saying, okay, release encumbrance was true for this invoice, so I need to unrelease the encumbrance when you cancel this. So when you cancel it, it makes the value adjustment and it unreleases the encumbrance. And now you have an unreleased encumbrance for negative $50, which is obviously a problem. You could release it and that would correct all the values, but yeah, you have to find it and release it. And Yeah. I think I saw Anne, you had your hand up, but
I did, and I guess my thought was, could we walk through T coming from it from a financial aspect, could we walk through T accounts with an encumbrance and a payment more of a visual than the words? I don't know if that would help to explain it better or make it clear. That was just a thought.
Yeah, I could. And so okay. I don't think I have an example in here right now of this stuff. But let's do something ongoing. That's subscription. Apologies for taking up quite a fair bit of time here, but so we purchased a vendor system. Let's say it's an e-journal. Okay. So receipts are required. It's not going to affect anything. It's not going to affect anything. Price is zero. Quantity is. So it's, I think typically the situation here would be it's just not something you're encumbering. So the price is zero. Right? Okay. Yeah. Sure, this has money in it. Okay. So we have an encumbrance for $0. There is some money in here. There's some money remaining. Okay. If you think about essentially how this problem is happening is you're now paying an invoice. So go new invoice. Adding some information here. It's EFT. Okay. So I'm going to pay this invoice, but it's not going to be for $0. It's going to be for $10. Rents. This environment is probably going to be a major issue.
Is there money in the fund?
Yeah, there is.
Oh.
Just to keep, like, I'm not trying to export to accounting or anything here. That won't be the issue, but okay. Okay. Okay, I'm just wasting time at this point. So, I will set up an example of this for another meeting. I think at this point, if there aren't specific use cases for having negative encumbrances, the reality is we just need to make sure that we're not losing track of money by setting a minimum value of zero on encumbrance transactions, which is probably more a math problem than user expectation problem. If you have any other questions or comments about this, please let me know. I'm just looking at the comments one more time. Sarah, you had a comment. Go ahead.
So funny enough, I decided to start poking around in my finance section, and because I recently had to cancel a invoice, and why is the type in finance now in the transaction view, the full overview for the invoice I canceled, the type is pending payment, but the payment isn't pending. It was canceled.
If it was canceled while it was in the approved status.
Then it would just hang out as pending payment forever.
It would be voided. It should be a voided transaction.
And it does if I hover over the little I next to the struck out dollar amount, voided transaction, but in the type it's called pending payment, which is
Yeah.
really misleading because it's not a, it's not a payment that that is pending.
No, but
It would
it
be better
was.
also to be called voided payment or something.
Yeah, it was a pending payment when the invoice was canceled. That's why it
Okay.
still shows a pending payment. Scott, you made a comment about. Yeah, when the fix result in inaccurate encumbrances, what happens when the amount of the invoice is less than the encumbrance? If the amount is less than the encumbrance, then you have just remaining encumbered value the way that you currently do today. And typically that value is either, released when you pay the invoice, or it's released when you close the order. Or it's just released manually. Yeah, which is kind of what Kimberly was saying there. And in general, that would sort of negate this issue with having negative values. Okay. That's it for me. So I will hand things over to Joe.
All right. trying to think of the best way to present this. I think I'll just go straight to the Confluence page I created. Let me share my screen. And yeah, you can see my screen, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, great. So one of the things that I want to work up for an upcoming release is we want to add orders and order lines to bulk edit. So right now, if you're logged into Folio, I'm in the Sunflower Bugfest. Right now, bulk edit supports inventory, instances, holdings, and items, and users. I don't know how familiar you are with with the bulk edit tool, but it allows you either to upload a file with a list of record identifiers or build a query based on similar criteria contained in the list app. That would then allow you to perform bulk operations. And the bulk operations can vary. So if we, I'm not good at building queries quite yet, but yeah, you simply go through and we could do like look for mode of in issuance is look for integrating resources. I don't know if we have any of those in the system. But I don't want to do a huge deep dive. But basically the idea here is, okay, yeah, let's go ahead and load this up just so we can get an example that we can look at and then make some comparisons. But depending on what you're trying to do, you can make bulk edits to these records. One of the things I'm trying, basically, I'm trying to figure out what this will look like for orders, and how it would work and what would be useful. So while this is loading, because that takes a couple minutes, I'm going to go ahead and copy this link into the chat so you can all access it at your own leisure. And I'm basically trying to gather use cases for the types of bulk edit operations for orders and order lines that you might be interested in. What are some of your specific needs? What kind of things would you want to do? And I know there are lots and lots and lots of them, but related to that is I'm also trying to identify what's not really needed, what we can ignore, or what we can deprioritize would be more accurate. And then we're going through and looking at what fields ought to be available in bulk edit. And part of what makes this so much fun is that certain things are one way only. Other things are only editable with an order in a pending state. Certain types of validation, and then there are some, this is still thinking about it, then there are certain contingency plans. For instance, your inventory interaction is like the fields that are in inventory are going to depend on your inventory interaction. If you have certain types of orders, the will trigger synchronized versus independent. And there's a lot of business logic in the orders app that can make certain things behave certain ways. And so I'm trying to figure out how that would apply to this because we want to try to avoid illegal operations, as it were. So, yeah, that's basically what I'm trying to do. Is everyone here familiar with bulk edit now that I've pulled some up? And give you a quick look at basically how it works. So we have the columns, and if we start the bulk edit, then basically it would allow us to look at the various eligible fields, which are not all the fields, but allows us to check all the fields and take various actions. So if we have an administrative note, we can add a note or change a note type or find notes. So we can change a note type to a different type of note, for instance. Or we could just simply add a new note with the following data in it. Alternately, like suppress from discovery, that's a checkbox. So we can simply set it false or set it true. So there's a lot of flexibility concerning what we can do, and you have the ability to take multiple actions within within an a given edit. So yeah, basically at this point, I'm gathering information so we can figure out what are kind of the what are some of the target things we ought to be looking for? What are some of the common use cases for bulk edits and or for bulk edit for orders and order lines? And I know it looks like Sarah already has thoughts, but I'm curious to hear kind of what kinds of things people are interested in. We know there's interest, but we want to focus on the right things in the right way.
It's also really important if you go back out one step, Joe, and when you opened actions, see all the checkboxes, all the fields. So what is visible and how it's labeled can be really important because then you get that on your screen and you can, even if you can't bulk edit those fields, seeing them can be really, really important when evaluating whether your query is giving you what you want or not before you bulk edit anything. So paying attention to that is also really important.
That's a good note. Yeah, so I started putting together this page basically just to start the analysis of it because obviously, yes, we want to be able to bulk edit, but like I said, we want to make sure we have the validation. I'm already pretty sure that if you have a mix of open and pending orders and you try to make disallowed changes to open orders rather than blocking the entire process. I'm thinking it would be preferable to make the changes everywhere that you can make the changes and show an error log of those that you can't, but not stop the operation. You know, some of my questions involve like, do we allow the bulk conversion of one-time orders to ongoing orders? Because you can't go from ongoing back to one time. That's a one direction change. I ask here, should we allow bulk editing of fields not editable once the order is opened? And I'm thinking the answer to that is no. Once the order is opened, if the field isn't editable, bulk edit should not be a means to do an end round. Yes, Sarah, I see your hand up.
I didn't realize you could go from one time to ongoing even. What flower is that once it's open?
Oh, not once it's opened.
Oh, okay. So just during pending.
Right.
Okay, I see. But should we allow bulk conversion of one time to ongoing the revision during pending? Then I don't understand why the reverse is not permitted. How would why couldn't you just go and switch from ongoing to one time?
Can we do, wait, maybe I'm confused. I know we recently did some work with this. Dennis, I don't know if you remember anything about it. It might have been just me, but we did allow we did something where I think maybe in Trillium where we'll allow a pending order to go from one time to ongoing, but not the other direction. That might be upcoming.
So for pending orders, it shouldn't be an issue either way.
Right. That's what's
Okay.
confusing me.
Oh,
It,
maybe
it's
it's for
a
open order. Maybe we're enabling it for open orders. That's it. Yeah.
and I don't think it was the order type. It was the receiving workflow changing from synchronized to independent, even when an order is open. But I also am having more and more trouble keeping track of all the stories.
Yeah.
So I have to look back, but
And now I
yeah.
remember we had an extended conversation with Daria about this. Daria is our QA.
I would definitely look at that again because that statement doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
Like I could see the workflow that Dennis is mentioning, but one time versus ongoing at the order level. Definitely during pending shouldn't matter whatsoever. Like, it's a checkbox.
Right. So I'm just capturing Lisa's comment here. Oh. I'll go back and retrofit the requirement.
But are you tr wanting us to go here at a later date outside the meeting and put in use cases, or is this a frozen page and we need to let you know what we would like you to put in?
No, you're more than welcome to add content to
Okay.
this.
Okay.
This is still early days, where it's like, we really need to do bulk edit for orders and order lines. This is something we ought to do. And now I'm getting it down to, okay, but what does that actually mean? And so the more information I have about what that actually means and what you want to see, the better equipped I'll be to define it for what is actually deliverable. So please do feel free to add use cases, comments. If we have a, if you have questions, you can throw them in the questions thing. If I have questions, I'll throw them there. Yeah, this is a community page. This is not a page that I own. So yeah, this is me just trying to wrap my head around, okay, what are we doing? Changing fund codes and expense classes. That I think is pretty straightforward. But yeah, that's the other thing I did was I went through and just started looking at orders and order lines. Yeah. Yeah, so looking at order lines, this is an order that's in pending status. And there are just lots and lots and lots of fields. We do want to keep things from getting too overwhelming. But at the same but I don't want to break any logic, and I want to make sure that we're focusing on what's really going to be useful here. So but some of the stuff I want to make sure we don't break. So receipt status, if I have receipt not required, receiving workflow immediately goes to independent order and receipt quantity. So that's just an example of one of those checks that we check kind of things that we have. Is there a use case where we would need to bulk edit in contributors or bulk edit product identifiers? That seems to me to be something that's going to be fairly individualized per piece, but maybe I'm just making things up. On the other hand, I can see some bulk edits happening surrounding packages. So like bulk editing in all of these get attached to this linked package. But are there other package-specific bulk edits that we need to be able to support?
So just to, I mean, this is very complicated, like you were just showing with the, if you change to receipt not required, immediately the workflow becomes the independent workflow, right? And your other question has to do with, should we not be able to bulk edit things that are not editable once the order is open, when the order is open? So what I think, what I'm getting at is, I think status of order and what you can edit at that time has to be clearly defined in bulk edit. So, like if I have lots of pending orders and I want to bulk edit them, then I should be able to bulk edit anything I can change while it's in pending manually too, right? But if my title is connected to inventory, I cannot change contributor. I cannot add product identifiers without breaking that link. So I don't want to be able to inadvertently break my link to inventory by trying to bulk edit in identifiers. So I think it's that needs to, I think there need to be flags or there need to be barriers set up where the error log will then give you out information having to do with that, right? Like saying that then takes a special override or something like that if we want to go that far. But I think we should be really, really careful that people don't inadvertently do things that they don't realize they're doing, like breaking their link to inventory or yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I am a bit, I use bulk edit for inventory. So I can't wait, but it can, you do have to be careful.
Can it Unopen orders or reopen orders. Well, some things I think can safely be edited while they're open. That's part of what I'm looking at. So, I'm going to pivot on your question, Suzette, and I'm going to ask, is this something you want? Do you want it to bulk unopen or bulk reopen or bulk close orders? Because I'm not, I'm leaning toward not having a prohibition on it can only edit orders that are in a pending status, because there are plenty of instances where you might need to edit ongoing orders due to vendor change, like you have a, ongoing subscriptions that gets taken over by a different agent or some sort of other publisher change or some sort of something else. You're going to be editing that order several times over the life of that order. So I don't want to preclude you from including that in bulk edits. But is there a desire to support unopening, reopening, and closing? And just for comparison, I'm going to close out of here and open up why is this not showing anything? This is very strange. All right. Okay, Buckfest has decided to go crazy on me. There we go. Okay. So switch to order lines. Better, and I'll go to this one. So this order is already open. So if I go into edit on the order itself, there are a handful of things that I can still edit. So I can still link a package. I can still add a receiving note, but I can't change the status of whether it's a package. But I can add some notes, I can change receipt dates, I can change claiming information, and I can change cost information. But
And you
the
can do vendor, if you scroll, vendor reference number area is totally editable. And you should be able to bulk edit that section for sure.
Right. So what I'm hearing is that the cost, fund, location, and vendor information are really high value.
Those are all your note fields. They're
And
all
note,
editable.
and that was one thing. Another thing is with the note fields, are you, when you change a note field, is the expected behavior that it will add a note or that it will overwrite an existing note?
So that is is kind of problematic. So in instances in inventory, you often add. And here in orders, we have the problem that you can't, right? Internal note, there's just one. Cancellation description, which is basically a note field, there's just the one field. Renewal note is just the one for you don't add, right? So I just always put the most recent, most current stuff at the front. And just push every, and it goes like that. So how to do that in bulk edit, I don't know. But that would be a good thing to figure out because like being able to add cancellation description or renewal notes in bulk would be really great. I'm doing a huge cancellation project right now. So I've copy and pasted notes into those fields over and over again.
Okay. That's good feedback. It's something for us to think about. I don't know that we can necessarily do it in reverse order, although we might be able to, but I do think we can at minimum append so that they're captured without losing anything. But yeah, I'll talk with Dennis and I'll talk with the team and see what we can come up with. And I realize we are now over time. This is not the last you'll hear of this. I'll keep working it out, but I think we're going to want to come back and revisit this probably sooner rather than later. So expect to hear from me in a couple of weeks about this.
Thank you, Joe.
And
Thank
Joe,
you, everyone.
just to say, so I'm active on Bella, and with inventory, it's been a very iterative process. So I'd rather see the, just start adding fields that are the easy things, that I can add tags in bulk that we didn't get to notes till much, much later and down the road because the note thing is really complicated. So, but it is so it's a great feat. I mean, it's great bulk and lists.
Okay, so you'd be okay with we were to cut scope, go after the low-hanging fruit, and just get the easily, focus on vendor and finance stuff and then extend from there.
Yeah, and tags, anything that's just purely or just on off, right? Toggle on, toggle off, and that doesn't have any business, doesn't have any interaction or where I'm not suddenly breaking a link or something like that.
Okay. That's really, really good feedback because that'll make it easier for us to scale what we're able to do and get something pushed out.
Thank you for looking at it. It's very exciting.
Yeah, and the key is then also if you put the low-hanging fruit in, people will start using it from this group. And then once they start, then they will be able to give you better feedback about the more complex and difficult stuff. And we can have richer conversations about how best to handle that.
Excellent, thanks. And that's really part of the reason that I was looking for use cases is I was trying to get a sense of how would you all use it at least initially. Because I know when you have powerful tools, you figure out new and creative ways to use it. But if I understand what you're missing right here and now, I can focus on that first and build out. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.